Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols. This is beautiful, right, Richard? We're right here. The arena's behind me. Champ Richard Jefferson is next to me. We are missing our compatriot, Kendrick Perkins, still back in Houston, but he will be joining us for this show remotely, and he is going to join us here in Milwaukee tomorrow. Hey, Perk.
What's up, Rach?
That was
how you
so
doing
good
today?
To see.
I'm speaking only to you.
Richard is just excited that he gets to sit in this seat so that the arena could be behind.
Yeah, arena's behind. But Perk, nice of you to join us. Thank you for joining us.
We've got more guests waiting to join us later in the show. We've got a lot of fun people coming through. But first, let's talk about last night. It can be hard for athletes to have perspective when they're in the middle of an NBA Finals. Every game, every minute, it feels so crucial. It is easier to just start focusing on the micro and leaving the bigger picture for another day. But Giannis Antetokounmpo, he's different. No matter how much attention the rest of the world focuses on his free throws, whether he can truly be a finisher, or what his banged up knee can and can't do underneath him, Giannis himself has continued to maintain a larger sense of perspective. This game, he says, it's fun. Playing at this level, he says, it's a privilege he never thought he'd experience back when he was a teenage street vendor in Greece just trying to help his family put food on the table. So while going down 0-2 in your first NBA Finals as more than 16,000 fans repeatedly taunt you from the foul line would certainly mess with a lot of other players' heads, Giannis told us back in Phoenix he wasn't going to twist himself into knots over it. And sure enough, as the series shifted to Milwaukee last night, he made sure the world saw just how unruffled he really is. 38 minutes of play, the man notched 41 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, anchoring a Bucks team that stood its ground even after the Suns seemed to start taking control of the game early in the second quarter. Phoenix up by 6 at that point, but Giannis absolutely determined to push back. This sequence, I mean, Bucks have the ball, Giannis dunks. Next Bucks possession, Giannis with the and one. Next Bucks possession, Giannis recording the layup, all of which helped Milwaukee close the first half on a 30-9 tear. Now, Phoenix did fight back a bit after halftime, even providing the most spectacular individual moment of the game when Cam Johnson barreled down on PJ Tucker. Oh my, that is just ridiculous. And when PJ was also called for the blocking foul, I mean, the freeze frames of his face immediately afterward became just NBA Twitter's favorite meme. It is excellent. Johnson more than just a dunker in that quarter, though. That three-pointer put the Phoenix with 4 on the scoreboard. But at that point, the Suns were also spending large chunks of the game without center DeAndre Ayton.
Problem.
Who'd picked up his fourth foul less than 2 minutes into the second half. And with backup center Dario Saric out for the series with a torn ACL, Giannis pounced on the Bucks' advantage down low. In fact, look at this shot chart. All 14 of his made field goals, every single one, came within 5 feet of the basket. That dominance, combined with a series of timely buckets from Jrue Holiday to push the Bucks on a 24-6 run, well, that would shift the game for good. And after it was all over, the quick whistle on Ayton, the overall free throw disparity that favored the Bucks, that became the topics of conversation, and we will talk about that on this show in a minute. But it's just important to note that when Giannis was presented with those opportunities, he is the one who stepped up and cashed in, including at the foul line, where he was 13 for 17. And afterward, yes, he had perspective on just how fortunate and happy he was to be in that moment. In fact, he used the word enjoy 9 separate times during his post-game press conference.
9 times.
A press conference he gave while his 1.5-year-old son Liam was running playfully around the room. It was adorable. And in a lot of ways, Liam being there was a physical manifestation of the way Giannis sees things. That even after he played the biggest game of his life, there is still a much bigger picture than what happens just out on the court in a given night. Here is how he described it.
I feel like I've come a long way just to be able to, you know, sit here, being interviewed by you guys, playing in these games, being with my teammates. It's been a long journey, and I'm trying to enjoy every single moment of it. And being down or up or whatever the case might be in the series, being out there in 20,000 fans, you know, 20,000 fans outside the arena, you know, cheering your name, cheering for the team, just happy to, you know, have NBA basketball this time. of the year with the two last team standing. So that's amazing, you know, to me. And so I'm not trying to, I don't worry about the outcome as much as I just want to enjoy the game. I want my teammates to enjoy the game, and I know that by enjoying the game, I'm going to have the opportunity to win any game we play.
That is really impressive perspective. And maybe Giannis not gripping about the outcome of these games in his every waking moment is the reason the Bucks had, well, such a good outcome last night, as he discusses. Either way, the big picture is now clear to all. The Bucks are decidedly back in this series, and it's Giannis who will have a whole lot to say about where things go from here. All right, so with that performance last night, Richard, Giannis joined LeBron, Shaq, Jordan, Rick Barry, and the logo, Jerry West, on the list of players to post consecutive 40-point games in a single finals series. Perk, this is such a high level of productivity from Giannis. Do you think that he can sustain this going forward?
Yeah, he can, Rachel. Look, he's the most athletic guy on the floor in this series, right? And you think about it. Where did he hang around? The paint. He was in the trenches last night. I thought he did a hell of a job of setting screens, dribble handoffs, rolling to the basket, not trying to push the ball up the floor, letting Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton be playmakers for him. I thought he did an excellent job of going to attack the glass. Look, when DeAndre Ayton goes out the game and they go small with Jay Crowder, you should take that as a sign of disrespect. And most importantly, Giannis played with a certain type of swagger last night. He played mean. He played aggressive. He put fear in those guys' heart. I love the passion that he played with, and I absolutely do believe that he could keep this up. No one could stop him when he's attacking the paint, when he's around the basket, when he's doing his job. And I thought Bud finally put him in a great position to be successful. And I thought Giannis accepted that role of actually kind of playing that center position.
No, I think 1,000% he can sustain this. This was never a question. Can Giannis sustain this type of play? Look at the names on that list. People wonder why at times like we're so critical and we're splitting hairs with, you know, Michael Jordan and LeBron James and Shaquille O'Neal. It's because he's that good. He's that talented. Jerry West, Rick Barry, like Giannis gets criticism because they expect the same thing from him as LeBron James and Shaquille O'Neal. The question is, and it's always been, the lingering question has been, are his teammates the type of players that you can put next to him? And is Coach Bud the coach to put him in best position? It's never about, is Giannis a monster? Is Giannis good enough? Yes, he has holes in his game, but if you can fill in those holes either via teammates or via superior coaching, then there's not a lot that you can do to stop him at that point in time.
Well, part of it, too, isn't Giannis per se. Can he get it done?
Yeah.
It is, what is the defense there for him? Now, other teams have had some success just basically walling off the paint. If we can put, I know, Director Kathy, if we can put that shot chart back up of Giannis and sort of all 14 were within 5 feet of the basket. Obviously, DeAndre Ayton being in foul trouble, which we'll talk about in a minute. But also, don't forget, Dario Saric, the backup to Ayton, is out. He is not coming back. His ACL is torn. So, Richard, when you look at this shot chart, whether Giannis can, quote, get it done or not, right? How much of this is going to come down to, can the Suns not have that shot chart with all those green circles right under the basket happen again?
Well, again, this is what I talked about in game two. It's not just about Giannis putting up these numbers. It's about, because you know he can do this, it's about how his teammates play around him when he's putting up these numbers. Don't just sit there. Don't just watch. There were so many great cuts from the back door and the baseline. There were so many slashes where Giannis is a great passer. But if you're just standing there watching him do this, there's a lack of involvement with other players. But we saw Chris Middleton play well. We saw Drew Holiday knock down shots. We saw so many guys do things that they have been inconsistent with throughout the postseason. And again, they were at home. Mm-hmm. That's why they were able to play so well. But you can't just do this at home. They're going to have to win on the road at some point in time.
Well, I want to play for you guys a little bit of what Monty Williams was talking about after the game. As I mentioned at the top, DeAndre Ayton got into foul trouble last night. Giannis alone, guys, shot more free throws than the entire Suns team, which, by the way, that has happened twice now. Listen to Monty.
That's going to happen. I'm not going to get into the complaining publicly about fouls. Just not going to do that. But you can look, you know, we had 16 free throws tonight. One person had 17. So, you know, DA is, we got to learn from that. We got to beat guys to the spot. And he'll grow from this. I promise you he will.
So, look, that was very gracious of Monty Williams, who is very gracious. We had Bud talking about the free throw disparity in game one, which was heavily in the Suns' favor. And ever since that press conference, the free throw disparity has been in Milwaukee's favor with both games two and three, with Giannis shooting more free throws than the entire Suns team. So, Perk, what do you make of that? Is that just a quirk of how these games have gone, or do you think there needs to be more of a conversation here?
No, it's no conversation. If you're watching the game, right, the Bucks are in attack mode, especially Giannis. And what is the golden rule when Giannis get around the basket? Is to foul him, send him to the free throw line. Tonight he just last night he just happened to make his free throws. So, you know, I'm so tired of the Scott Foster, the CP3 narrative and all this stuff that's going on. No, that had nothing to do with why the Suns lost last night. The Suns were not aggressive. They did not take it to the basket. They were settling for jump shots. Giannis established his identity in the paint, along with Brook Lopez, along with Bobby Portis, along with PJ Tucker. They were playing like men amongst boys. So you can't discredit the Bucks for how they approached the game last night and in game two. And Monty is saying, the league is saying, wrap Giannis up. We know he doesn't shoot free throws well. But last night, he stepped up to the plate and he made them when they mattered the most. And now all of a sudden, we're having this conversation.
Yeah, and it's true. Oh, well, in game one, he didn't. You know what he was doing in game one? He was coming back from a hyperextended knee. He wasn't the best version of himself. He was testing out his knee. He was going back and forth. Do you know what's also funny? No one else on his team shot more than three free throws. So this wasn't like a team dominating and everybody get their whistle. There was one whistle. Rachel, you've been covering this league for 30 years. No one ever complained when Shaq shot 20 free throws because that was the game plan. The game plan was to wrap him up. The game plan was to do this. So Monty Williams handled it. He wasn't being critical. I don't like the Scott Foster nonsense, but I will say this. Giannis, wrap him up. If he makes 13 for 17, you're probably going to really struggle in that game because you know he's going to do everything else well.
But look, 13 for 17 is not his common profile, right? So I'm not doubting that he could do it again. Of course he could do it again. But I don't know if the Bucks can count on him doing it again. So it might be something that the Suns still want to push.
The one thing I will say this is that if you look at these free throw numbers, understand that this wasn't the Bucks getting the whistle. This was Giannis getting the whistle.
Right.
And he's the two-time MVP. And he should get the whistle because he lives in the paint.
Paint, clearly.
That's it. That's it. So it's like, I don't want to hear anything about free throws. The one game that he didn't was the game that he was coming back after missing two games.
Right. All right. Well, hey, guys, Rachel. I want to talk a little. Oh, go ahead.
We're going to break, Rachel. No, Rachel, go to break.
No, we
got to get the break.
Rachel, before we go to break, I was just going to ask you to ask Richard and ask the producers, can he button up his shirt a little bit? That's it.
If you were here, listen, don't worry about me and
we'll
how, my sexiness
this
over here.
In the commercial, but we're also going to talk a little bit of Team USA coming up, guys. They lost to Nigeria in a weekend exhibition game. Brian Windhorst is going to join us from inside USA basketball camp to give us the mood inside the locker room. Well, we want to take a little bit of a deeper look at what is going on with Team USA basketball. So joining us now from Las Vegas, Mr. Brian Windhorst. Thank you so much for being with us. Richard Jefferson here as well and Perk over in Houston. And Brian, Team USA, they entered Saturday's exhibition against Nigeria. They were 28.5-point favorites, and yet they somehow lost. So what was the mood of the team after that game?
Yeah, you could have gotten 25-1 here on betting Nigeria straight up. I wonder if anybody actually put that bet down.
No.
You know, they tried to play this off, okay? They tried to say this is part of our process. Nigeria's had 3 weeks together. We've had 4 days together. And you could obviously see that. But guys, 9 years ago, the U.S. played Nigeria in the Olympics and won by 83. 5 years ago, they played them in an exhibition and won by 43. Granted, there were seven NBA players on this Nigeria team. And you guys are right. They were playing against their peers, not against guys they were in awe of. But the U.S. Mm-hmm. started five All-NBA players. And there was a lot of isolation basketball. There was a lot of, not chemistry issues like they didn't like each other, but chemistry issues they didn't know where to go with the ball. The play that they ran down 3 points inside 10 seconds with Kevin Durant and Damian Lillard on the court was an abomination. I don't know how else to say it. It was an abomination of a play. So this is a reminder that getting this gold medal is going to be really hard. And I'm not going to overreact to a loss, and certainly they aren't either. But if Nigeria is not considered to be a serious medal contender, maybe they'll prove us wrong. There's going to be a lot of work to do between now and about 4 weeks from now when that gold medal is handed out.
I don't know if there is a player that's under any sort of pressure. Look, this is my thing, just to give people like a world scope. Wait, I'm looking at this camera right here. what?
Welcome to television, Richard Jefferson.
I was so confused there for
a
second.
Proud of you every day.
Brian, my question is, do you feel like there is a player that's under pressure? Like, especially with all of the talent that's on their USA team, is there one particular player?
I know why you're saying that, Richard, because, you know, it's your former teammate, you know, Kevin Love, who's under the pressure. He was a controversial pick. And look, you got to be honest with you guys. Go down the list and look at the available American big men. It's not an enormously long list. So many of the great big men in the NBA today are international players. Even people say, well, Carl Anthony Towns and DeAndre Ayton. Well, those guys are from the Caribbean. They're not eligible to play for the U.S. So they went to Kevin Love. He played 5 minutes in the first game, had three fouls and no impact. So obviously the stars are going to make this, but people are going to be watching Kevin Love closely, and they're going to need to get something out of him because at the big men position, they just need the help there.
Wendy, I see you down there in Las Vegas. It looked like you outside. I was just in Phoenix, and I had a portable air conditioning unit because I couldn't deal with the heat. I'm pretty sure you got one. I hope you got one. But look, I know the Team USA, they facing Team Australia tonight. I want to know what's the expectations for us coming into that game. What should we be expecting?
I don't get the perk treatment. I don't have the portable the air conditioning unit. I was very impressed, and actually my compliments to you for getting that set up. I love seeing that. Australia is absolutely a medal contender. They probably should have won the World Cup 2 years ago in China. They had a devastating loss. They're still not over it. They have a loaded team filled with NBA players. Patty Mills hit a game winner to beat Argentina in their first exhibition game a couple of nights ago. The Australians beat the Americans in the lead up to the World Cup in China back in 2019, and it was the first serious warning sign that team was in trouble, and that team finished in seventh place. Now, this team has got way more talent than that. I don't necessarily think this team is in trouble, but I'd like to see some better play, especially from the frontline guys. Bradley Beal, Damian Lillard, Kevin Durant were all poor in their first game on Sunday night.
But, Brian, it's one of those names that you just said, Kevin Durant. And we remember not that long ago Kevin Durant answering a reporter's question with, I'm Kevin Durant. Don't you know who I am? And, in fact, you have to think that Kevin Durant is going to be the headline as USA Basketball marches toward Tokyo. We have seen how hard he fights and how important this is to him. Before we let you go, though, as we're showing video of what happened in this last game, Brian, we put the names of some of the players up on the screen, the rotation players, and show that all but one of them are NBA players, to your point of them not being scared. Their coach is also not scared. I want to give a special shout out to Mike Brown, who has taken control of this Team Nigeria program and just shown just how excellent he is at team building, at sort of bringing these guys together in a quick amount of time. Brian, what has been your read on Mike Brown while you're there before we let you go?
Well, I got a chance to talk to Mike Brown after the game, which is great to be able to talk to coaches face-to-face here in Las Vegas. We're very, very happy about that. And Mike was obviously over the moon. He doesn't want to make too much of a deal of it, but he's not taking a salary to coach this team. He's haven't telling them to put the money into developing the team. And guys, I just want to be honest with you. I know that it was an exhibition game, and I know there were NBA players, but it is one of the biggest, it's the greatest win for African basketball, you know, in international play. And so, not only is it a reminder that Team USA doesn't have the advantage that they used to have, it's a reminder that the rest of the world is coming. And you know what? Bam Adebayo is of Nigerian descent. He could have played for Nigeria. He chose to play for Team USA, and they're darn lucky he did. But Team USA has got to play at a high level to make sure that these players who have African descent choose playing for the USA, if I may be quite frank, because if they start choosing playing for their homelands, it's going to be a major situation for the USA to deal with going forward.
So interesting. Well, shouts to that team. Shouts to Mike Brown. And we will see what happens with the U.S. team as we go forward. Brian, we'll be checking in with you all throughout the week of training camp and, of course, once the Olympics start as well. Thank you so much for joining us today. Richard, Perk, we will be back here. So everyone else, stick with us. Coming up, we're going to talk about the backcourts. The Bucks' backcourt outscored the Suns' backcourt in Game 3. Do we expect CP3 and Book to bounce back in Game 4? We'll discuss that next. Stick around. I'm Rachel Nichols, back with a couple of our NBA champs here. We've got Richard Jefferson here in Milwaukee. Perk is on the way, but until he gets here, he's still in Houston. He's coming. He'll be here tomorrow, Richard. Come on. Just because we can, let's take another look, friends, at the poster from Cam Johnson over PJ Tucker in Game 3 last night. Video like this never gets old.
No, but Perk did this in high school, apparently. We're going to have to get some standard, standard definition tape to see it.
You know, I really hope the videos do get old.
This inspired us to run it back. The best playoff posters ever. 91 MJ on Patrick Ewing.
Oh. This was back, like, posters became, like, people just call it a poster. But they used to make pictures of these and used to hang them on your wall. That's why they were called posters. That's not just a random term. And I literally had this poster in my room.
You did, really?
Yes, I did. Yes.
You had this poster?
I had this and the Wings.
Wow.
This and the Wings poster.
All right, 2005, T-Mac on Sean Bradley. Shout out Sean Bradley, by the way. Woo. Tracy was just lethal.
Yes.
Just lethal. We could show 100 T-Mac dunks. Yeah, they're so good.
Yeah, we miss you, T-Mac.
He was so different.
Woo. Even Sean Bradley was like, what was that?
2007, Baron Davis, Andre Kirilenko.
And he got a technical for lifting up his shirt, which is still...
At least he didn't get a technical for laughing on the bench.
That's happened.
And you should get a technical for having your shirt unbuttoned.
I'm gonna give you one more. I'm gonna give you one more button.
I heard that, Perk. 94 Pippen on Ewing. I mean, this could arguably be number one.
That's probably up there with the most disrespectful. My guy Pete Myers, get him, Big Pete. My guy Pete Myers. You guys don't know Pete Myers, one of the best assistant coaches I ever worked with.
And no, look at this.
Oh, look at him too.
And the fact that he just sort of walks over him, that's part of.
I know we talk about AI over T. Lou. That was far more disrespectful.
Number one, the blister, Sean Kemp.
See, now they'll give you 9 technicals, 3 flagrant fouls for pointing. You'll have to go to some sort of therapy. Like, you're going to court-ordered, like anger management if you dunk and point at somebody like that. That's how soft they are. Mm-hmm.
Really?
No, I'm just making that up. I'm just making that up. There, no one's that soft.
You played, 2 years ago.
I know. I was
in
part
the league
of the bad
today,
part.
You're part of that problem. Yeah. Guys, that was, first of all, just I love strolling down memory lane like that. But let's get back to this series and the Suns' backcourt, especially Devin Booker. Just didn't play at the same level he did in the first two games. He'd be the first one to tell you that. He totaled 10 points, 3 of 14 shooting. Chris Paul did lead the team with 19 points, but it was his lowest total of the series so far. So combined, Booker and CP3's numbers, down in points, down in assists, field goal, three-point percentage, all of those categories if you look at the first two games versus what happened last night. So, Richard, do you expect a bounce back in Game 4, or do you think that there's something that has fundamentally changed with the way the Bucks are defending these two?
Well, you know, it's funny. I don't ever want to go wait and see, but you can almost kind of see this happening. Like, when you look at the numbers for Devin Booker, on the road, like in Lakers, Game 3, right, he really struggled. It was his first road game in the playoffs. He goes 6-for-19. Against the Clippers, first road game against the Clippers, he goes 5-for-21. Like, the Nuggets, we don't count because they were a depleted team. That's part of the reason why Portland completely
changed. Count.
They changed their coaching staff because Denver should not have beaten Portland. That's why they did. That's why they've been through this whole rebuild. Yep. And then here against the Milwaukee Bucks, he really struggles, goes 3-for-14. So you can see something consistent happening. The first time he's on the road in a hostile environment against a high-level, fully loaded team, that's when he struggles. But he has answered the call every single time in Game 4 and has stepped up and played exponentially better.
Well, RJ, as a former champion, I would expect you to come out and actually give us some analysts instead of read numbers. And here's the thing, Rachel. Here's the thing. Let me tell you what happened last night. What happened is that the Bucks finally went into that film room and Budenholzer got his stuff together. When you look at what they were doing to Devin Booker, they started PJ Tucker on him. He made D Book uncomfortable from the jump. They knew their plays, their switches were on point. Everything was tough for Devin Booker. And if you look at games 1 and 2, he just happened to make tough contested shots. Those same shots were there, but the Bucks were a little bit more aggressive. Their awareness was there. We saw them switching with a purpose. So nothing was easy for him. Look at PJ right there. Body him up. Tough contested twos. That's what happened last night. The Bucks went to the film room.
Don't stop it. I literally, the reason why we put up those graphics is to give context. Yes, we can be like, look, they did this and they played harder defense. And look, you're telling everybody everything but what they need to know. What they need to know is it's been very consistent. His game 3 performances when he plays on the road, because they've had home court advantage throughout this whole postseason. Every single game 3, he has extremely struggled. And then in game 4, he's gotten exponentially better. These are not numbers. These are facts. That's all it is.
Well, say that. You don't need a graph chart.
You and I understand that, Perk. Everybody doesn't understand that.
So the things you confuse everyone. I have to break it down for the people in layman's terms so I can talk barbershop talk so they can have a clear understanding on what's going on. You go into graphics and analytics and all this.
We're talking to different audiences.
Nobody wants to hear that.
That's it.
Give the Milwaukee Bucks their credit. They went to the film room. They made an adjustment. They made it tough on Devin.
It says Suns backcourt bounce back in game 4.
This is the joy of the show every day. I could not have predicted that today's show would meander into whether we should show graphics on television and the buttons on Richard's shirt.
He's mad. Well,
who knows what will happen next after this commercial break? Oh, I do. I know one thing. This is awesome. Milwaukee Bucks legend Marquez Johnson joining us live. This man can still dunk at age 65. He does not look 65 when you get him around a hoop or, frankly, when you see him on TV in this next segment. Stick around. Buckets. This is going to be fun.
Buckets.
As for the jump here, we're in Milwaukee, where the Bucks picked up a win last night to make the series 2-1, still in favor of the Suns, but Bucks trying to even that up on Wednesday night with game 4. And look who is here with us.
The legend.
Woo-hoo! At this time, I would like to welcome in. I want to make sure I get all your accolades right here.
All right.
5-time All-Star, 3-time All-NBA selection. Marcus, thank you so much for being with us here today. We're just thrilled. Well,
thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Look, last night, your Bucks picked up a finals win for the first time since 1974.
Wow.
That is just crazy. What is your reaction to witnessing that live last night and just this playoff run overall?
Well, it was just a lot of fun to see this team finally play up to their capabilities and shoot the ball the way they can shoot the basketball. Giannis has been terrific. I'll say terrible. Terrific the last two games. But it's been a struggle for Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday in game 2. But to see them bounce back, especially Drew in that third quarter, was good to watch. But just the energy, the effort, the home crowd getting behind this team, kind of riding the crest of that emotion of the crowd, I think was the thing that fueled this team to victory.
Okay, because you follow this team so closely. You know, you've done so many games for them. What do you think that they need to do moving forward to maintain this? Because you know, you can't just win all the games at home. Some of this home has to carry over to the road. Before we get to the road, what do you think they have to do in game 4?
Well, game 4, you know, I think you're going to see some adjustments, obviously, from Monty Williams. I thought we did a really good job. You and Perk were going at it about Devin Booker, and I think both of you are kind of right. I think there were some adjustments made. You can see how the Bucks played Brook Lopez a little bit higher up on the ball screens, where he met him a little earlier so he couldn't get ahead of steam, couldn't get momentum. But it's basically, you know, you can't get full today on yesterday's pancakes. So that same energy, effort. You've got to crank that up exponentially for every game. There's more energy. There's more effort. There's more focus. There's more of everything needed to win the basketball game. So, Coach Budenholzer, I have faith in him. Unlike some people around here, that he will look at the film and continue to make the right adjustments. But it's about the players, man. Yeah. It's about coming out there and playing as hard as you've ever played basketball in your life. And then that's what it's going to take. And this team, they're slow to pick that up, but when they do, you can see the results of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Perk wants to jump in here. Oh, no, all right. No, I get to jump in. I do want to ask a little bit about your dunking. I mentioned it on the last show. We showed this when you did it. You are 65 years old.
Yeah.
You still do this. And by the way, as you sit across from me here, you don't look remotely 65.
Well,
so
that.
We might need to check a little birth certificate action right here, but we'll get to that. How are you? This man just played a couple years ago. Richard, sitting next to you, first of all, the little strut there is phenomenal.
Yes. That's a little thriller action going on.
Little there, go. Exactly. Yeah. Perfect. He complains about how he can't even be in dunking shape now, and he's like a couple years out of the league. How are you doing this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it's all the crazy taxing of my body that I did when I was younger, all the crazy strengthening drills for my legs, running beaches and leapfrogs with 25-pound weights behind my back. I mean, I'm paying a price now in terms of my hips and my neck and everything else, but I still have some good verts.
You're going to keep doing it every year?
Well, until I can't do it anymore.
Okay, until you don't complete it, then we don't post the video.
But the thing about it is that it's motivation, inspiration for me to work out 6 days a week, not a lot, 90 minutes at the most, but just to stay in reasonably good shape. I don't dunk except on my birthday. That's the only time I try and do it. I never know from year to year if that's going to be the last time, if I can get it done. This year, I didn't think I was going to be able to do it. I called my son Josiah. He was coming over to video. I was like, man, I don't know. This may be the year that we shut it down.
But yet, no.
Yep.
Hey,
able to get up there and
Josiah Johnson, best follow on Twitter.
Agreed.
His son, best follow on Twitter. If you're not following him, you're making a mistake.
The meme king.
But
right?
Go ahead. Yeah, yeah, harder than Mean Camp. But really quickly before, you know, Rachel grabs you, White Man Can't Jump, my favorite movie, so impactful for me as a kid. Like, what is it about that movie that still has so much leg and it's in the culture like so many people? I know you still get it to this day.
All the time. It's just the trash talking, I think. Ron Shelton wrote the movie tried to capture the essence of playground basketball. The character I played, Raymond Dickens, was based on a true life guy by the name of Reggie Harding, and I wrote a screenplay about him that I think Anthony Davis would be perfect for, but he had a tragic life filled with drugs and gunplay and all kinds of negative stuff, but it was a lot of fun. Wesley Snipes, Woody Harrelson, we had a great time doing it, and I think that comes across also.
Yeah, it absolutely does. So great. By the way, I love how you just dropped that in. I wrote a screenplay. This man has so many talents beyond just
basketball.
Put him in the
Hall of Fame.
And again, your son making a great contribution.
Well, and the final point, we got another screenplay by the name of Burning for Justice, talk about social justice issues. These guys integrated the fire department in Los Angeles in the mid-50s, and these are the real social justice warriors, the first kind of social justice movement. And I was able to interview 5 to 10 of them before they passed away, all of them in the 90s. And Steph Curry, I got a role for him. Steph, I got a part for you in this movie.
He's ready.
It's a support role. You don't have to carry the film. It's a support role. Arnett Hartsfield, Google him. Just a tremendous guy. Law degree from USC, fireman, the whole shot.
So. Well, you can write the script. Those guys can be in it. You can dunk while you're in there. Your son, who is, again, the meme king of Twitter, can go photograph it and put it on the website. This is going to be all
inclusive.
In one. Thank you so much, sir, for joining
us.
We love having you here. The Jump will be right back after this, so stick with us, everyone. It's crunch time here on The Jump, and the Magic hiring Mavs assistant Jamal Mosley as their new head coach. We talked about this a little bit on Friday's show, but now that it's official, Richard, what do you think of your friend getting this job?
I'm so excited, mainly because, you know, how hard he's worked. He's worked for two Hall of Fame coaches. He worked for Rick Carlisle. He worked for George Karl. He had 4 years in Cleveland helping to rebuild what they were doing there. So Jamal Mosley is in a great position, and I'm excited for him and the Orlando Magic organization.
Well, Rachel, I'm happy for him, but go ahead. The producer, Steve, told us we had 45 seconds. Richard took up 43 of them, so go ahead.
The Jump will be back tomorrow.
I can't hear anything Perk's saying. I don't care. I look great.
We'll see you tomorrow.
I look great.